Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 154. I'm Rob Wright, security news director at TechTarget, and I am here with Alex Gulafi, security news writer. Alex, welcome.
Thank you, Rob. Good to be here.
Yes, you and I are back at it again, not in Chernobyl, from the confines of our home offices.
Week six. It might be week six.
Wait, week seven?
Week seven?
Might be week seven.
We started like mid-March.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So I think you're right, week six. Time has lost all meaning. Everything's coming together. But yes, you and I are remote.
Yes.
And I thought this was a good opportunity to discuss, since we are remote, discuss remote access risks and attacks, specifically one particular area. But I thought this was a good subject matter, not only because you and I are both remote and so are millions of other people, but because you and I are working on a couple of stories independent of one another that touch on this subject matter, which we can get into in a little bit. But there's been a number of vendor-driven threat reports over the last several weeks during this pandemic, the COVID-19 situation, highlighting the risks around remote access, remote management software, specifically the vector of Microsoft's Remote Desktop Protocol, also known as RDP, and other remote management applications and services as well. There's a ton of them out there. Everyone's using them right now. I mean, it's sort of the new normal. So this isn't just, you know, the traditional use of an IT department or an IT service provider or a managed service provider using applications like a TeamViewer to remote into our laptops to service them or to look at an issue that we're having. This is everyone's kind of using some type of remote access these days. But RDP is something that has been on the radar of a lot of researchers and vendors now for well over a year. It's become a favorite vector target of ransomware groups in particular that are seeking to sort of easily spread their ransomware to a number of different organizations by using RDP connections to their advantage. And it's unfortunate because RDP is pretty ubiquitous. It is a popular protocol. It is a popular framework. It's used in a number of different applications. And obviously it's Microsoft and it's in Windows environments everywhere. And the majority of enterprise environments use Windows. So you can imagine just how big this footprint is for this vector. There are a couple of reports that have come out very recently in the last few days. Alex, you are writing about one right now. There was a Microsoft, I'm not sure how to refer to what they sent out. This is sort of
a report.
It's a report. That's fair. It follows along a similar report that the Microsoft Threat Protection Intelligence team sent out a couple weeks ago about sort of threat groups targeting specifically ransomware groups targeting healthcare organizations. They sent another report out. They published this on, I think it was 2 days ago,
mm-hmm.
So Tuesday. So why don't you tell us about a little bit about that and what you're working on?
Sure. So one would hope that with this new pandemic that the world finds itself in, that ransomware groups would show some kind of honor among thieves and avoid targeting critical services and healthcare. But according to the Microsoft Threat Protection Intelligence team, ransomware groups are doing just that. They're targeting healthcare and critical services.
Yep.
Affected parties include aid organizations, educational software providers, government institutions, manufacturing, medical billing companies, transport, and plenty of non-critical businesses and organizations as well, of course. A lot of it has been the first 2 weeks of April,
mm-hmm.
but as they later said, there's been quite a bit of dwell time leading up to there. So the first 2 weeks of April doesn't even tell the full story, if I got that right.
Now, so I read through this one. It popped up in my news feed. And, you know, I think I said that the attacks have generally, you know, they're using the term healthcare very broadly. They're talking about attacks on medical billing companies, aid organizations. So it's not, you know, like we haven't heard about that many hospitals or medical facilities being hit. Still,
right.
It's alarming because, as you and I have talked about in recent podcasts, we've sort of debated, like, are ransomware attacks going up? Are they going down? Are we going to see more as time goes on? And are these guys really swearing off, as they have publicly said weeks ago, that they were going to swear off of targeting healthcare organizations? I'm curious, like, do you think, is the implication here that these threat actors, like, they gained access to these organizations and they're just like, maybe they're waiting for this to blow over before they detonate their ransomware payloads? Like, are they just sort of like, they gained access a few weeks ago or maybe months ago, and they're just sort of biding their time until they can strike? Or are they just collecting data and just doing the recon? I don't know. Is there a determination there in the report?
No, not necessarily. No, like, outright determination, at least from what I read. Mm-hmm. But it does seem like there's at least some intention to deploy the ransomware payloads.
Yeah, like at some point in the future, regardless of maybe the circumstances. I would imagine that, like, if they have, like, if you're a threat actor, if you're one of the ransomware groups that is mentioned in the report, because they mention a few. So there's, let's go through this. What is it? Robinhood, mm-hmm. ransomware, NetWalker, Pony yep. Final, Maze, Maze, which everyone knows now. They must know that Microsoft knows and is probably warning a number of organizations, warning other vendors that maybe might not be privy to this information, that this is happening. I suspect that they probably don't want to wait around a long time. The ransomware gangs, that is, probably mm-hmm. don't want to wait around a long time before activating their ransomware, because otherwise all of your efforts are going to be for not, like, it's not rendered pointless. I guess if you stole healthcare data from those organizations, you can still get something out of the intrusion. But obviously it sounds like this has taken a bit of time, that they've compromised these organizations through a number of means and performed, reconnaissance, lateral movement, according to the post. Mm-hmm. So what, I mean, I guess going back to the question of ransomware up, down, where do you think it is? Does this make you feel better or worse? It sounds like it makes you feel worse, about the situation, and sort of confirms your suspicions that we were going to be looking at more attacks, going forward and not less.
Yeah, if we're doing my emotions as a judge of, like, where I feel on the ransomware sort of thing right now, I don't feel good, Rob. Like, I definitely don't feel good about the current state of ransomware. My guess is it's probably about the same.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
I want to believe, I want to be optimistic. When I read this, I thought to myself, there's no numbers in here about the number of targets and how many organizations. This is, again, it's sort of a broad use of the term healthcare organization. It is a it doesn't have sort of a quantifiable scope in terms of the number of attacks, the number of compromises, the number of intrusions. There's also some it's not really clear whether these, you know, if these intrusions have been detected by Microsoft, does that mean that the ransomware detonation or payload deployment was stopped? Like, so there's things in this report that are very unclear to me. It's great news that they found this, that they've detected this, that they're acting on it, and I assume warning the organizations that they've picked this activity up on. But if Microsoft is saying this after a few weeks ago, saying, you know, we think there's going to be more attacks, we think there's impending ransomware hits coming against healthcare organizations, and then they have this to sort of share with us just a few weeks later, then I take that as a bad sign. I take that as this is probably significant activity and not something that is maybe minor in scope, that they are expanding a little bit and broadening a little bit for effect to get the message out that people need to protect themselves. Because I'm sure they do believe that, but still, this is, and there's a number of ransomware groups mentioned in here, and this is, it's concerning. It's concerning.
One must imagine that statistically significant, yes, is the least that can be said here.
Yes. And it makes sense. I'll say, because again, going back to RDP, we know that this has been, even before COVID-19, this was an area that threat actors loved to exploit. And in this case, you know, they say for a number of different groups here that they're using RDP brute forcing, which is essentially, you know, just firing login attempt after login attempt at these accounts and hoping that, you know, there are maybe some common reused passwords or maybe specifically reused passwords based on specific individuals, admin account holders in these organizations, that they're hoping will open up one of these RDP connections for them. That's upsetting. That is obviously concerning. So what, I mean, as you've been working on this, have you, when you read through this blog post, or this report, and you get down here to addressing internet facing weaknesses, I mean, this is one thing that a lot of vendors have talked about in these reports on remote access and specifically RDP. They're encouraging, Microsoft is encouraging organizations to take certain steps with their, you know, their RDP and their remote applications or virtual desktop endpoints, or whatever. So the first thing that comes up every time is multi-factor. Implement multi-factor authentication, two-factor authentication, any way you can on those accounts. Let me ask you, Alex, because I've been big on 2FA, MFA for a while, just as a result of being on this beat and being generally paranoid. I mean, I have like 2FA enabled for stuff like Steam, like my Steam account. I don't know. Like, so it would seem odd to me. Does it seem odd to you that like there are enterprises out there that have RDP enabled, but they're not MFA protected around those or any remote access software?
I think it depends on how old timey the business is.
Sure. Yeah.
Because like 2FA is definitely a thing. MFA is definitely a thing of this current era we find ourselves in, or at least the last few years. Not to say it hasn't been around longer, but it's been popularized in the last few years. And I think some businesses were around longer than that. Maybe they have a smaller staff size. Maybe they're a smaller enterprise with a lot of less in the loop staff. I don't know. I think it's the more old timey a company is, the less likely that they are to know about 2FA.
Yeah. It's weird too, because I feel like, and maybe this is, maybe we can sort of sidebar a minute to something that you and I are both partake in quite a bit in terms of video games and PC gaming. But I feel like over the last maybe 5 or so years, I heard a lot from different video game services, vendors, game developers about the importance of two-factor authentication protection for their accounts. And I took that as a good thing. So I feel like maybe younger, like your generation, if I may, knows a lot more about it than, say, my generation would have at that same time, like in my early to mid-20s. And certainly probably more than a lot of enterprise users that are my age now, that maybe not have, maybe they're not exposed to it. Like, I think a lot of people will have Netflix accounts or Disney Plus accounts now. They have Amazon accounts. They have, but like, I don't know how many people in their 40s or 50s have 2FA enabled on, like, some of those services don't even have 2FA available. So, you know, I don't know how ubiquitous that is for organizations, but I feel like in terms of gaming, there's been a number of them out there that have really preached the use of some type of MFA, whether it's through your phone or it's through a mobile app or whatever. So I that's a positive, right?
It is a positive, although you have to wonder, did such a thing happen following the number of hacks that hit gaming platforms around 5 or 6 years ago?
I'm sure
the Sony one being the biggest one, of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's been others too. I mean, there's been user hacks of, you know, of actual consumers, gamers and their accounts. There have been internal hacks and situations that have been pretty bad. I mean, this happened somewhat recently with Nintendo. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like more people, especially at a younger age, probably know about MFA, and, you know, whether that's going to translate more as time goes on to people recognizing the need that they need to protect their whatever type of remote accounts they have, or remote services, remote applications. I don't know, but at least we're starting from, I think, a better baseline. The thing that is troubling to me, so this is, we'll close out with this. So in the Kaspersky report about the increase in brute forcing attacks or attempts on RDP over the last couple months, it's pretty stark. Like, it's, we're talking about, you know, millions upon millions of attempts. So they recommend, you know, obviously use strong passwords. Because if you reuse passwords and you have a weak password and you go on like a service like Have I Been Pwned, which, Alex, I know you're all in on Have I Been Pwned and things like that. It's really sobering when you put your email in and you see, this has been breached and your email address has been exposed and your hash password may have been revealed. It's unnerving.
Yeah, but it's kind of cool too.
Yeah, that is, because at least you can do something about it.
Right. What is a strong password though? Like, well, is a strong password the one that Google Chrome always recommends that has like the Da Vinci Code in it?
Yeah.
Or is a strong password just something that you don't use for your other accounts that uses a capital, lowercase, and a symbol?
I mean, I think the perspective on what constitutes a strong password depends on who you ask. I think the strongest passwords are the ones that are sort of auto-generated by, like Google, that is just gibberish and there's no association with anything in your personal life, personal tastes, what you like, what you don't like, and it can't be reused. Hasn't been reused. There are other people that will say, I don't think you need to go quite that far. If you just do a long password with a number of unique characters, that is something that's going to be hard to guess, whether it's 16 characters or whatever, that you should be okay. And most of the different services that measure, you know, is this weak? Is it moderate? Is it good? Is it strong? Like, they're pretty accurate for the most part. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. And obviously, you know, Kaspersky says enable two-factor authentication, which to me, working on the story that I'm working on about managed service providers that use a lot of these remote apps, that's the big thing. Like, all of these guys that I've talked to recently say it's the first thing that they do once they started learning that they were being targeted by ransomware groups who were seeking to use them as a springboard, as a platform to reach other enterprises. That was the thing that was their biggest weakness and the thing that they addressed the quickest in terms of closing whatever exposure they had with RDP or other remote software. The thing that's really odd to me, though, is that, you know, these organizations didn't have, whether it's a vendor or whether it's a managed service provider, didn't have that 2FA enabled previously or weren't sort of advocating for it. And the thing that really sticks out is the organizations that aren't using RDP but that didn't disable it. Like, it's like they don't even use it, but it's enabled and they have an open port. I think it's 3389, which is like, you're not even using it, but you can still get pwned by it. And it that takes some work. It takes some work to go into your environment, figure out where it may have been enabled, why it's enabled, or if anyone really is or isn't using it, and then to close that port and make sure it doesn't affect you, because RDP could be like, it's using a lot of things, and like turning it off or disabling it can have unintended consequences. And it's a little bit more complicated, I guess, than, you know, just simply implementing 2FA, but it's still, it's just, again, it goes back to, this thing is so ubiquitous and so, you know, the footprint is so big that, I mean, some people don't even realize that they have it enabled and that they have that port open and that they could be hit that way. So it's good that at least some vendors are out there. Security vendors are calling more attention to it, promoting the best practices. I know that there's a number of managed service providers that are doing this as well. Companies like ConnectWise that provide remote management software to managed service providers are doing the same thing. But still, it's like, we've known about this vector now for a while, and to think that there's still instances of it that are open, exposed, and underprotected with no strong passwords, no MFA, like that's depressing. That's alarming. I mean, it's not, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. But to your point, Alex, about, you know, the being fearful of impending increases in ransomware attacks, like if this was addressed, if this was, I guess, more, if there was better hygiene around RDP, that would probably reduce the risk.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you would feel, I know you would feel a lot better about it.
I would feel a lot better, Rob.
Yeah. Well, we should have a couple of stories here coming in the, you know, in the coming days, and at least in my case, probably next week, about the touch on this risk, this vector, and the work that's being done to address and, I guess, limit the exposure there to close the hole. We'll see if it happens. It's as good a time as any for organizations to take action around it. So hopefully they do it. Are you hopeful? Are you like, you know, give me your take. Like, how many people probably saw the Microsoft alert? It's gotten a fair amount of coverage already, and it's Microsoft, and I'm sure they alerted organizations that were underprotected, but like, how many organizations saw that and started looking at their RDP deployments to see if they were underprotected?
I'm going to be both optimistic and pessimistic and say a few.
Okay.
Like, not a super significant amount, but I don't think it had zero impact.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it had zero impact. Yeah. I think maybe it might be a little higher than that because it's healthcare organizations, and I imagine these guys are probably maybe more on edge, more alert right now because of the situation than they might have been. Mm-hmm. But you could be right. You could be right. We could be back here next week talking about one or two organizations that make headlines in the coming days about these very same types of ransomware attacks. So who knows? We'll see.
Right.
Fingers crossed. Hopefully we're not. Yes. Alex, thank you for taking time out today to chat with me about making RDP secure again. And
yes.
The growing ransomware threat around RDP and remote services. I appreciate it.
MRSA.
Yeah. I should trademark that. Can I trademark that? No, probably not. Right?
No, probably not. But no, thank you, Rob.
Okay. Well, and I appreciate it. And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. We will see you next time.